The biggest thing is what they do to our country. They're taking massive amounts of money and spending it on items. I went through a list of 200 expenditures that were made, and I found three that looked like they were reasonable. Okay, three.
Ah, Doge update from the President of the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Radio program of record for these parts and everywhere else here in the Puget Sound region. Go ahead, give us a shout if you would like on our text line, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757. I want to continue with what you were just hearing from Philip Jay about Doge and how it is already, and this is why heads are exploding on the Democratic side of Congress. They are already uncovering ridiculous waste, fraud, and defiance on the part of federal bureaucrats who weren't elected to anything. Latest example for you here, the Department of Homeland Security. They have just recovered $59 million of taxpayer funds that FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Administration, had sent just last week to hotels in New York City to shelter illegal immigrants. Let me say that again. Just last week, FEMA sent money, $59 million, to luxury hotels in New York City that were housing illegal immigrants. Elon Musk sent out a tweet that said the Doge team just discovered this, sending this money violated the law and is in gross insubordination to the president's executive order. Okay, here's what you need to know about how the Trump administration responded to this. Number one, they got the money back, as I mentioned. And number two, they have fired FEMA's chief financial officer. They have fired two program analysts who helped make this appropriation happen. They have fired a grant specialist. This after the agency promised to swiftly act upon the unauthorized $59 million payment. So this gives you an idea of the depth of the rot that had accumulated within the federal bureaucracy, where even with an election and a new president, even with clear direction from the president, making it clear that no more appropriations for this kind of thing, even with Doge making headlines and drawing outrage, much of it based on preposterously inflated and exaggerated claims about them trying to seize control of people's private information. Just nonsense. Even after all, in the middle of all this, FEMA still trying to get away with sending almost $60 million to, as Elon Musk pointed out, luxury hotels to continue housing illegal immigrants. Why the hell are we sending money to hotels to shelter people here illegally? So what I love about this is not just the fact that it was found, not just the fact that they clawed the money back. I love the fact that they fired the people involved in this grant. This idea that federal employees are impervious. Oh, you can't. How many times have you heard this? Well, you can't fire them. Donald Trump is saying, the hell? Watch me. Again, this activity by FEMA took place after Trump had explicitly signed an executive order requiring a review of the agency in order to improve its operations. It goes against the appropriation, went against the Trump administration's agenda, and Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, under whose aegis FEMA operates, fully in support of the actions taken against these FEMA employees. Remember, it was in December, was it, or late November, when FEMA came under fire, when one of their staffers started telling emergency responders to avoid offering assistance to people living in homes in North Carolina after the hurricane if they had a Donald Trump sign in their yard. In fact, Gwen, obviously this happened in October when the campaign was underway, not in November. So this is wonderful to see. These are headlines you never would have seen in a Kamala Harris administration. First of all, they would have kept funneling money to hotels to shelter illegals. But the fact that, number one, Trump told them to stop. Number two, they didn't stop. Number three, Trump found out, got the money back. Number four, fired everyone involved. Thank you. We are seeing a restoration of sanity in Washington, D.C. Still have a ways to go when it comes to Olympia, but we're well on our way in Washington, D.C. Here's what I'm talking about. In Olympia, Democrats have unveiled their new what's called RUC. That stands for Road Usage Charge. Remember, I told you that they were getting this ready. The Road Usage Charge would essentially impose a toll on you for every mile you drive everywhere in Washington State. Here is Como 4's report.
The State House Transportation Chair is now pitching a proposal to charge drivers for every mile on the roads. Representative Jake Fay says his bill anticipates further state reliance on electric cars and declining gas tax revenues. The bill calls for a 2.6 cent per mile fee or road usage charge. It would be phased in over several years starting in 2027. It would involve individual self-reporting of mileage and would not apply to freight or heavy haul trucks. Fay says under his bill, drivers would also get a credit for any gas tax, meaning a driver would not be taxed for both gas and the road usage. That brings us to our Como Pulse poll. You can scan the QR code on screen to participate. Tonight we're asking, do you support a road usage charge in Washington State? And here's a live look at the results. Right now, 11% of people do say yes, but most people at 89%, they say no. Again, if you'd like to weigh in, scan the code that's on your screen. It takes you directly to the story on comonews.com.
Young Zach, could you, when you have a chance, check Como News and see what the current poll is?
Yeah,
is
we can pull that out.
It's hold on, let me see. Okay,
I updated it on your
Philip
script.
J,
if you look,
just checked it out before we went on.
Yeah,
the
right
air.
Before we started the show at 6.
And it is.
Numbers should be right around just under 5,000 votes. I think it's 4,888 votes. And the no percentage, the opposition percentage is 86%. So it's gone down a little bit, but that's pretty overwhelming opposition to this paper mile.
Not really.
And again, this is a non-scientific poll. So this is not anything more than the people who watch Como saw the story or read their website, went to their website, saw the story on the website and clicked, I don't like this.
Well, but it also shows a healthy sense of, oh, hell no, I don't trust these guys, not on this. Did you notice it said self-reporting? Now, obviously, self-reporting ain't going to work on something like this. So they're going to need to know how far you're driving. So obviously, it's just going to be a matter of, I mean, that's what's great about the gas tax is that you're taxed for the gas you use, and that you know, if you use a lot of gasoline, you're going to pay a higher tax than if you don't. So presumably, if you don't do much driving, you won't pay as much to use the road.
And if you're an out-of-state resident and you buy gas coming through the state, you pay into that system as well.
Because you're using our roads. So again, that's actually a pretty good system, the gas tax. This road usage charge, here is Chris Daniels. He attended the press conference where everything was laid out.
We will not be requiring any device in a vehicle. It will be self-reported.
State Representative Jake Fye says he's heard the feedback before crafting a bill to charge drivers by the mile instead of with gas taxes.
It's a declining revenue.
Fye is pitching a 2.6 cent per mile fee or road usage charge that would be phased in over several years, starting in 2027, with a voluntary program for EV and hybrid drivers and waiving of registration fees before before becoming mandatory in 2029 for those cars and all others by 2031.
We're going to go on the basis of the honor system.
The House Transportation Chair believes the RUC, as he calls it in short, can be enforced on vehicle sales and registration and exempts long-haul freight and truck drivers.
How can you possibly budget on an honor system?
Well, that's, I mean, that obviously that comes from experience.
Oh, it does it? You like your experience on Sound Transit? How's the honor system working on Sound Transit? How has that worked?
I don't know. Washington State residents seem to like paying taxes. They keep voting for them.
Well, yes. And then when the honor system says, okay, please comply, how many comply? So look at the Sound Transit pay per use, which relies on the honor system. They had at one point, what was it, 20% compliance in some areas? One out of five people, 40% in others? So I love that. Well, experience, you know, my support for the honor system comes from experience. No, it comes from being dense. It comes from not paying attention. Chris Daniels wasn't done. He interviewed some drivers, see what they thought.
What do you think about paying a per-mile charge versus paying gas taxes?
I don't agree with it. For one, it's like kind of Big Brother kind of watching you.
That's what a lot of people think. You're another driver.
You need an odometer statement from everybody, and who's going to be on the up and up on that?
See, that's what would come next. And here's the argument they would use. They would use the argument, well, the people who are using the honor system and paying their tax are being cheated by those who don't. So therefore, we must prevent honest people from being cheated. Therefore, everybody line up and get your car prepared for the installation of a mileage device. That's how they would that's how they would make their case, that people who don't honor the honor system are cheating those who do. We must have a way of protecting these honest people. Anyway, we're going to talk with Maria Frost, formerly Washington Policy Center poobah of all things transportation, because she says, oh, everything you've heard, it's even worse than that. She will join us at 7:04. There's a lot we're going to be talking about. The Pope is excoriating the United States mass deportation program, says it's unchristian. You have at least, and this is a really disturbing story out of Berlin, 28 people are hurt once again, an out-of-country asylum seeker plowing his car into what was a union march happening in central Munich. They have at least 28 people, including some children, who have been injured, and that toll might increase. Again, this is just a series of attacks involving, frankly, Muslim immigrants from Afghanistan and Syria who have been attacking people with cars and with knives. Isn't it interesting? When there's a wave of knife attacks, you don't hear about the need for knife control.
Don't threaten them with a good time.
Yeah. When people are being run down by Muslim extremists, you don't hear about car control. But when there's a shooting, it's, well, why isn't there gun control? Notice the impulse to restrict and curtail and control people's freedom depends completely on whether they chose one weapon as opposed to a different weapon. So anyway, we'll have details for you on that as well. It's a busy, busy news morning. And like I said, for heaven's sakes, how about this? Every day continues to be Christmas since November 5th. The Trump administration claws back $59 million that FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Administration officials, defiantly sent to hotels to pay for illegal immigrants staying there, and they clawed back the money and fired all four of the officials involved. Good for them. Philip J. Vandervoort III, good for him, as he's preparing the social media sweep here on the John Carlson Show. Good morning. It's 6:21. Oh, goodness sakes, it is 26 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. see that gorgeous moon again? I don't know. The sky just seems blacker,
darker.
What do they say? The darkest hour is just before dawn.
Yeah,
and the moon stands out again. It just looks brilliant.
I was watching one of the Como weather forecasts a couple days ago, and Shannon O'Donnell at Como called that full moon we're seeing a snow moon. I don't completely understand the reference, but that was what she was calling it.
All right. So, well, there we go. So what are you seeing in the social media world?
Something going on with the State Department of Transportation and construction work zones on our freeways. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I'd seen a couple of news outlets reporting on this, and then I kind of came across the Washington State DOT social media handle on X, and they write 1,300 or more work zone car crashes happen yearly in Washington. So 1,300 plus crashes happen in construction zones on Washington freeways, putting workers and drivers and passengers at risk. Now, new work zone speed cameras aim to change that. And one of the King 5 reporters is reporting on this story, Drew Mickelson, and he added a story on social media. It says, we're getting a demo of the speed ticket issuing cameras coming to Washington State freeway construction work zones. And it will start later this month. The first offense is just a warning that you'll get by mail because this is a camera system. You're not going to get pulled over by an officer. But if you zip past the work zone speeding and the camera clicks because you've exceeded a certain speed, you're going to get that notification in the mail based on the license plate of the car. So you may not have been driving. A child, a family relative, a spouse may have been driving the car. And you would receive a first offense warning by mail, but a second offense is a $248 ticket. And certainly, reading between the lines here, this looks like an admission from either the State Department of Transportation or maybe the State Patrol that they still don't have enough state troopers who can be in these work zones to pull over cars and figure out if this driver is either licensed and insured to drive. They're kind of taking the easy way out with this camera system. I understand the frustration with safety problems and speeders and crashes and work zones. But that, I think, is a component here that nobody's talking about.
I don't like the law being enforced by a machine. I don't like these red light cameras.
Right.
I don't like these speed zones.
It's clearly an admission that there's a problem, but we don't have enough law enforcement to deal with the problem.
But here's the other problem is... what do you do if it's a work zone but no one's working?
Great question.
What do you do at night?
Mm-hmm.
If you're speeding, do they turn the camera off at night? Do they turn the camera off on weekends?
When there's nobody actually working?
Because remember, they get money.
Right.
They get money if people think, it's a Saturday afternoon, there's no one working. And so you ignore the work zone slowdown, mm-hmm. and then boom, costs you $250.
And what's another thing?
So will they turn the cameras off at night and on weekends?
Great question. What's another thing that leads to dangerous driving on our local freeways and highways? People driving, camping in the left-hand lane, not passing anybody and preventing people from passing. And what do you get? Somebody who decides they're in a hurry, wants to zip around between cars or take dangerous lane changes to weave around cars because someone's camping in that left-hand lane. And I think that there needs to be more emphasis on that because every time I'm out on a freeway, I see people cluelessly camping in the left-hand lane, and that contributes to dangerous driving because everybody wants to get around someone who's basically blocking and preventing other people from passing in the left-hand lane. I think that would go a long way in reducing bad driving and reckless driving and dangerous situations.
Think about it. A left lane camper, someone going slow in the left hand lane, which is legally only a passing lane. You're only supposed to drive in the left lane when you're passing.
That's the priority.
Other cars. Those people are creating congestion just again by
unnecessarily
by themselves. In other words, it's not an accident. It's not, because there's a terrible blizzard and people are driving slower. It's just because someone's going slow that people are driving slower. So, again, this is another, man-made problem. I favor a huge immediate crackdown on people who drive in the left-hand lane slow. and sometimes don't let people pass them. Anyway, it is coming up on 32 minutes after 6. Big announcement made on yesterday's show. Did you hear it? We'll remind you what it was coming right up. I think this is Neil Sedaka? And I believe it was remade into an even bigger hit by the Partridge Family sometime in the 70s.
I don't have that one on vinyl.
Yes. Young Zach saying, what's a Partridge Family? What are you guys talking about?
Is that like a Brady Bunch?
Yeah, actually, kind of, sort of. Anyway, it is 22 minutes to 7 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. Yesterday, big announcement promised for 8:03 in the morning, and a big announcement was made if you weren't here. I began by pointing out that I'm probably having more fun right now doing radio than I've ever had. And by the way, I've had fun most of the time going back to 1993. This is a great time to be doing the show, and we've got a great team. And in spite of all that, I made the decision to step away from the microphone, to retire from radio. It was a simple decision, but not an easy one. Tomorrow, I am going to announce, again, same time, 8 o'clock, what my new job will be, actually my new career, because I'm not just stepping away from radio. As many of you know, I also used to do TV and wrote a regular weekly column. So as things go, this is a new career entirely. I'm very excited for it, and I hope you'll be very happy for it. I think you will be, but unfortunately won't be able to continue staying here behind the KVI microphone where I've been since, again, for the most part, since 1993. Your comments on our text line are certainly welcome. That's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. So, again, the reason for my leaving has nothing to do with the station. The station's doing great. We continue to be profitable in an industry where a lot of stations are not. I've been blessed with great producers, great board ops, great staff for most of my career. And now we've got the best team of all. And so I really want that to continue. Everyone in the Carlson household is healthy. There's no health issues involved. Again, it's a career change that I'll tell you more about tomorrow. But, of course, that raises the issue, what's going to happen when John leaves? What's going to happen? The answer is we don't know yet. That'll have a lot to do with what you think, because the company that owns KVI, this is our fourth owner, you know, is a pure radio company. And it's interesting, the first owner group that we had was, remember the singing cowboy, Gene Autry? He owned a company called Golden West Radio Broadcasters. We were owned by Golden West, and they were wonderful to work for. And then we had Fisher, and Fisher had, you know, its fingers into all sorts of different areas, including TV and radio. And then we had Sinclair, and they were almost exclusively a television company, but they had to buy the radio stations when they bought Como TV. So they eventually sold off the radio properties to the Lotus Media Group out of L.A., and Lotus is like Golden West, just a radio company. And what do you know? I have loved working for Lotus as much as I did for Golden West. They're pure radio. And there's something about a radio company. They understand the market. They understand the radio customer, radio listener. That's what a listener is, a customer. So they want to know what their customers think. And when you text us, you know, you can always email me, john@kvi.com, john@kvi.com, or you can text us at 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. There's a couple directions that the station can go in. I mean, hypothetically, they could change formats, but why would you change a format that's been working so well? So that won't happen. They like KVI. They like the sound of KVI. They love the customer loyalty KVI. Secondly, they could bring in another radio host. It would probably be someone here locally, because KVI, as you know, prizes itself covering local, city, county, regional, and state issues better than anyone. We will tell you what a lot of the rest of the media overlook or miss or ignore. We don't. We catch it. We pride ourselves on that. Always have. And of course, we want to keep our team together, because Philip J. Edward III and young Zach and radio legend Mark Christopher, we all have a chemistry all our own that really resonates with the listeners. So let us know what you think at 206-421-5757, or shoot me an email at john@kvi.com. Don't even need my last name. Just, you know, John will do. All right, it is coming up on 6:45. We have a quick update for you on that terrible strong-arm robbery of a 72-year-old woman attacked in broad daylight in the parking lot of a downtown Bellevue strip mall. Again, downtown Bellevue, in the middle of the day, 72-year-old woman attacked and beaten to the ground by someone trying to get her purse. We've got an update for you on that assault.
A 15-year-old has been arrested in connection to the strong-armed robbery of an elderly woman in Bellevue. Happened on January 10th when officials say the teen grabbed the 72-year-old woman's purse along 108th Street, shoved her to the ground, and ran off. This is the second person arrested in connection to this case.
The first is some 18-year-old punk who nearly paralyzed that woman. I believe she suffered a cracked vertebrae high up in her back, may have been her lower neck. Karina Vargas. And they got the 18-year-old, and he's in jail on a $250,000 bond. The 15-year-old that they arrested was, what do you know, suspected in committing other crimes as well.
Now, Bellevue Police Department said that they teamed up with Renton PD last Friday and arrested the 15-year-old boy and two others in Tacoma. Police said that they were in possession of a stolen car, and during their search, they found several stolen guns, debit cards, and drugs. And based on evidence they found, they were able to connect him to the strong-arm robbery of the 72-year-old woman.
Of course, the obvious question is, you're in a stolen car with stolen firearms. Why aren't you already in juvie jail? Why aren't you, in the juvenile justice center? Karina Vargas goes on to detail that this guy will be looking at illegal gun possession charges, but there's next to no penalty for that.
Now, the 15-year-old was booked into the King County Youth Detention Center on several charges, including possession of stolen gun, vehicle, and drug charges. Now, one of the suspects connected to this case, 18-year-old Madden McGraw, faced a judge this morning where he pleaded not guilty to several charges, including first-degree robbery, identity theft, and possession of stolen property.
Yeah, well, go ahead and plead not guilty. I believe you're on tape. So, and by the way, first-degree robbery, good. That's a strike. Let him know early on the meter's running. You're listening to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Our good buddy Lars Larson right around the corner as the commute continues. It's 6:48. Good morning. Yes, we are. Welcome back, everybody. 7 to 7. John Carlson Show on with my good buddy, our noon to 3. Oh, no, I just lost Lars. Oh, shoot. Oh, my goodness. Our noon to three host, Lars Larson, I went to punch the button to put him on the air, and instead I disconnected our good buddy Lars Larson.
We're going to have to kick you off the air for that one.
When am I going to learn? When am I going to get the hang of this job? Oh, maybe a week or two before I leave it. Oh, goodness sakes. Lars, how
time
are
for you?
You
to retire. It might be time for you to retire if you're going to fat finger the buttons. Now, I want to ask you, is Uncle Don going to get you a nice office at the White House in your new gig?
I have not confirmed yet what my next step is, Lars.
Okay, I'm just, I want people to know we're going to be transparent here, aren't we?
Yes. In fact, the Doge people were just searching through our computers to get email threads. So, you know, something might be it. But I'm not confirming or denying what my next step
I could get all kinds of conspiracy theories going. Like when they cut off the USAID money and all of a sudden John Carlson decides to retire. I'm just wondering. I'm just asking the question. That's all I'm doing.
That's right. I'm not being accusatory. I'm just asking the question.
Congratulations, John.
Well, thank you very much.
How many years is that in radio?
1993.
Congratulations, that is fantastic.
So it's been a little while. We still have 6 weeks together, you and me.
And we'll enjoy every minute of it.
Absolutely, and you'll enjoy every minute of the Lars Larson show this afternoon, noon to three, and every day of the work week, noon to three. Thanks, buddy. It is
Take
coming
care.
Up on 6:55, hour number two of the commute. This road usage charge is being teed up for passage. We'll talk to its maybe most feared critic, Maria Frost, coming right up on the commute with Carlson. Oh, who's ready for hour number two of the John Carlson Show? It is Thursday, February 13th edition of the radio program of record, heard this and every day of the work week from 6 till 9 in the morning. All right, a little later on, we're going to be talking about this very disturbing story. This is a trend, and it could very much be the incident that will change European politics. Another incident where a driver, in this case, a Afghan, quote, asylum seeker, has driven a car into a group of Europeans, German union members, who were marching. It was a union march. And 28 people are hurt. The casualty count might grow higher. And this is one in a series of attacks by Muslim Syrians or Afghans, and I think the German people have really had enough. Remember the attack on the Christmas village, Christmas town, that happened in December? Then there have been several other attacks as well, always with cars or with knives. So we will try and give you the skinny on that. If you're just joining us, the legislature is looking at a truly radical departure for where they are going when it comes to taxing you for driving. Now, traditionally, we have what is called the gas tax. The gas tax is among the highest in the country. I believe it's 44 cents a gallon. That does not count an additional 17 cents for the federal gas tax. So we always have one of the, you know, top three gas taxes in the country. Well, the legislature says, yeah, we got an idea. We're going to change all that. We're going to, instead of having the gas tax, we'll have what we call a road usage charge, basically a toll on every mile you drive. And the man behind all this is Jake Fye. He's a Tacoma state representative. And when Chris Daniels interviewed him yesterday, or questioned him during the press conference, here is what he had to say to Chris Daniels.
We will not be requiring any device in a vehicle. It will be self-reported.
State Representative Jake Fye says he's heard the feedback before crafting a bill to charge drivers by the mile instead of with gas taxes.
It's a declining revenue.
Fye is pitching a 2.6 cent per mile fee or road usage charge that would be phased in over several years, starting in 2027, with a voluntary program for EV and hybrid drivers and waiving of registration fees.
Okay. In other words, the honor system. Como TV viewers in a spot poll, obviously not scientific, asked what they think. They don't think much. Over 85% say, I don't like it. And they've had thousands of people respond to the poll. Anyway, the person who has looked into this in greatest detail is someone who's been tracking the road usage charge, even participated in a prototype experiment for the road usage charge. Maria Frost, that was when she was the director of transportation for Washington Policy Center. Now she's director of transportation for the Kemper Development Company. She joins us this morning on the John Carlson Show. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, John. Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate you making the time. Okay, now, does that sound, let's start way out, take the broad view. Does it make sense in an era of increasing hybrid and e-car usage to drop the gas tax and instead adopt a road usage charge? As a concept, does that make sense?
I think as a concept, it does make sense, but we are so far from the point at which we would be able to even drop the gas tax. The gas tax is here to stay for a long time. It will remain on the books. It will still be increased, I'm sure. And so this road usage charge, you know, I've always said it's good in theory, but when politics get involved, you get this very deceptive and messy legislation like what we've heard about today.
Okay, let's get into a little more detail about that. First of all, is it possible to replace the gas tax with a road usage charge?
It is possible, but I don't think that's exactly what this bill does. You know, the gas tax is very simple and easy to collect. It is constitutionally protected under the state's 18th Amendment, which means it can only be spent on highway purposes. It can't be diverted to other things like transit or bike and pedestrian modes. This bill sets up more of a tax mechanism that can and will be manipulated to extract as much as possible from drivers. So if you really look at the bill, there is a 2.6 cent rate that is intended to match kind of what we pay in state gas tax.
That's 2.6 cents for every mile you drive, and you,
that's right.
Okay.
Right, that's right. And that rate can and will be increased. there's no mystery about that. If the gas tax goes up, the rate goes up. Because the administration costs are so high for a gas tax, the rate will go up. Because the state says they need $1 billion a year or more to keep our roads and bridges from falling apart, the rate will go up. So the 2.6 is just a starter rate. Then on top of that rate, the state has included a 10% assessment, which is just a bureaucratic word for tax, that would basically take the amount that you pay in road usage charge, whatever 10% of that is, would be tacked on as an additional tax that they would send off to transit, bike, and ped. It's called the multimodal account.
Wait a minute. Wait, no one has pointed this out yet. There's a road usage charge and a surtax tacked onto it?
That's right.
No one's pointed this out yet.
Well, and again, it's obscurely called a road use charge assessment, and it goes into a separate fund to support transit, bike, and pedestrian modes. Keep in mind that the multimodal account that supports transit, bike, pedestrian, and rail, actually, is already very well funded by driver fees. You know, when you renew your car tabs, you pay a bunch of different driver fees. And the recently passed CO2 tax on gasoline called the Climate Commitment Act. Again, by the way, both of those are paid by drivers. I mean, drivers are paying for everything here, and they're paying an enormous amount in driver fees and in higher CO2 tax that funds these modes quite well. I think $2 billion per biennium. So despite that, the state has decided, oh, we need to tack on this 10% tax to
just
send
greed.
Even more money.
Oh, that is such greed. Here they just got a windfall from the Climate Commitment Act. All this money that is flowing to so-called greener forms of transportation and transit gets a healthy chunk of that. And then right after they get this windfall, they're trying to sneak on an additional surcharge on this road usage charge bill that would put even more money into transit?
That's right. And they call it something different. I mean, just like we had the debate a long time ago when the Climate Commitment Act passed, they were trying to tell us, look, this is not a gas tax. This is a tax on gasoline. it's a CO2 tax. But,
right.
I mean, I'm a driver. You know, when I fill up at the pump, I don't think to myself, well, I'm paying this portion of tax that's dedicated to the motor vehicle fund, and this portion of my tax is going to the multi. Nobody thinks that way. What they understand, what I understand at a practical level, is that I'm paying very, very high gas taxes. And this tax would also be very high, and yet another portion of it would be dedicated to modes of transportation that do not benefit me. And all of this in the context of the state telling us year after year that our roads and bridges are falling apart, which they are, that they need more funding, and yet we get this.
That is really, really astute observation by Maria Frost. Really appreciate you bringing that out about this bill. So let me ask you this. Speaking of paying fair share, how do we get e-car and hybrid drivers to pay their fair share?
Well, they do pay their fair share as determined by the state. They pay $225 in electric vehicle fees on their car tab renewals, which the state can adjust that any time.
So why do we need to do anything?
We don't. We don't. I mean, I think there is value in having a conversation about how we fund transportation as cars become more fuel efficient, as electric vehicles become more popular. But I do think we have time to figure that out and to get that right. This bill does not get that right. And, you know, again, for folks who own electric vehicle, they do pay. They don't pay nothing. anyone who owns an EV knows that every time they get their car tabs.
Well, you participated in an experiment, a road usage charge experiment, correct?
That's right, in 2018. And I tested out both kind of the low-tech option for submitting reporting mileage through odometer readings. And I also put a GPS transponder in my car. And, you know, the bill and the bill sponsors say that the GPS transponder is not mandatory. And that's true. However, is there really a choice here, a real choice? When you've got a GPS, if you put a GPS transponder in your car, it knows when you're traveling out of state, beyond state lines. Mm-hmm. It is able to produce a much more accurate reading and probably, you know, maybe even a lower amount that you would have to owe if you decide to you know, consent to giving your privacy away. Just for that small price,
yeah,
you might
really
have a lower tax.
No, thank you.
Yeah, and the odometer reading is you know, I think what people would probably prefer, but I think there would probably be issues of evasion and enforcement. And these are things that I'm not even sure how we would address.
So,
John,
so for,
I want. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for those of our listeners who drive, you know, internal combustion vehicle, you know, they're paying a gas tax. And if they're concerned that these hybrid drivers or e-car drivers aren't paying their fair share, as you pointed out this morning, yes, they actually are assessed a tax, which is equal to the average gas tax that people pay.
That's right. And hybrid owners, you know, they pay the gas tax and the electric vehicle fee. So they do pay their fair share. And if that, you know, the state determines that $225 is not enough, they can propose to change
right.
that.
So what's the problem? What is the problem that the legislature is trying to fix here?
They want more money, you know, and there's an argument to be made that more money is needed to fix our roads and bridges. But I mean, I have always said that before we give the state more money, the State Department of Transportation needs to be audited to make sure that the money
yes.
that we are giving them is being spent wisely. You know, when we see a bill like this, and I want to flag this for your listeners
okay.
who may not have read the bill. If you go down to Section 11, there are actually other things that this bill directs the Joint Transportation Committee to explore, some additional studies. And one of those studies includes looking at road wear from large and heavy passenger vehicles. So think people who drive trucks and how there might be differentiated tax rates based on hood height, or vehicle weight. Keep in mind, people with trucks already pay vehicle weight fees, but this would open the door to the state imposing even a more punitive higher rate through the road usage charge.
Okay, I'm looking at that now, and it's very important. We're not talking about semi-trucks. We're talking about, quote, passenger vehicles, close quote.
That's right.
We're talking about
that weigh a lot or that have high hood height, have a high hood.
We're talking about Ford F-150s.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. They're already looking to have a two-tiered system, two-tiered tax
system.
They're
already looking at ways, again, as I said in the beginning, to extract as much as possible from drivers. And that's why I called this more of a tax mechanism. You know, because it allows the state to do things that they currently cannot do with the gas tax, which is you just can't tinker with the gas tax, but you can with this. Okay.
We only have about 1 minute. Maria Frost, thank you very much for joining us. Boy, are you making the case against this bill. It is, again, a mystery to me why they keep pushing this when the gas tax is, I think, a wonderful way to collect money for roads, bridges, maintenance, and repair of our highway system. It is a user charge based on how much you drive your car and how much gas you use, and it taxes people who drive in our state from other places. So I like the gas tax. There's a way of assessing a fee on e-car and hybrid drivers, so there's no real need at all for a road usage charge. Someone's up to something here, Maria.
Yeah, I agree. And for folks who care about transportation funding in our state and making sure we get it right, whether you like the road usage charge or not, this is not the way to go. And I would encourage people to make their voice heard at the State House Transportation Committee today at 4 p.m.
Today, State Transportation Committee, 4 p.m. today. The bill number?
The bill number is 1921, House Bill 1921.
1921. All right. Thank you very much for joining me. I know that you also read the political tea leaves pretty well down there in the state capitol. What are the chances this thing passes?
I mean, given the makeup of the legislature, I'm pretty concerned, but I've also seen that there's over 13,000 people who have signed in con. on the bill online.
Nice.
I think it's going to be a great meeting.
How can people do that, by the way? How can people sign in, pro or con?
They can go to the look up House Transportation Committee online through the Washington Legislature, pick the day of the hearing, which is February 13th, 4 p.m., select the bill, and you have options there if you want to testify remotely or if you want to record your position for the record. So if you don't want to testify, just say, I want to record my position for the record, pro or con, and that's how you do it. It's very, very simple.
House Transportation Committee, and the House bill, the hearing is today, the 13th, the bill number 1921. Maria Frost, thank you very much for joining us this morning on the John Carlson Show.
Thank you.
You got it. It is 22 minutes after 7 o'clock, the commute with Carlson. Philip J. around the corner of the social media suite. All right. Back we are on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Van Orr III, right around the corner of the social media sweep. What's going on?
Well, you were just talking about the road usage charge, a.k.a. the pay-per-mile tax in the legislature. I've got another legislative bill I had not heard of until just a couple of minutes ago, but it would seek to change the state of Washington flag for all the predictable reasons you can imagine Democrats would want to use to change it. So we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, I want to start with a follow-up from last hour's social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And this is the work zone speed limit photo-enforced cameras that are about to go into effect. I told you the State Department of Transportation was announcing that. King 5 reporter had said, we're just getting a demo of the speed ticket issuing cameras coming to Washington State freeway work zones, construction zones. And the first offense would be a warning. But again, you wouldn't get pulled over. You just get the citation by mail. A second infraction would be a $248 fine. I came across a Como 4 story. It says the camera will only record when workers are at a job site, and signs will be in place to warn drivers when a work zone has an active camera. So as you were asking, what happens overnight when the workers' construction zone aren't there? There's your answer. So we're updated from that question you had on last hour's social media sweep.
All right.
State representative named April Connors is posting about House Bill 1938. And 1938 is a bill that says creating the Washington State Flag Redesign Committee. What could possibly go wrong with that, right? So April Connors is pointing out Washington Democrats claim George Washington has a, quote, limited historical connection, end quote, to our state, making his image less meaningful on our flag. And I
how about it kind of ties in the flag with the name of the state? Right?
I looked up the individual.
Or do they want to change the name of the state, too?
Maybe so. That might be step one. This is going to be a committee that they want to create, so we'll see what happens. But I looked up the bill sponsor, Representative Strom Peterson from the Edmonds Everett Linwood Area 21st Legislative District. He's the bill sponsor. The first couple of lines in the House Bill 1938 to redesign the state of Washington flag say, the legislature finds that the Washington state flag often faces criticism for its poor design and lack of relevance to the state's identity. So that's kind of the opening line of the bill.
Who does? Have you ever heard anyone criticize the Washington state flag for its appearance?
I mean, only people that are essentially apologists for rewriting history.
No, I mean, let me rephrase. Have you heard any normal person?
Yeah, that's a great way to phrase it.
Any everyday, ordinary, normal person ever say, you know, our state flag kind of bothers me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's kind of boring, but I don't think it's worth redoing.
I guess if we're talking about what's relevant to the state's identity for Strom Peterson, this legislator from the Edmonds area, maybe something more relevant would be, I don't know, a dilapidated homeless RV somebody smoking fentanyl off of a little foil on a sidewalk somewhere. Maybe that would be a more relevant to our state's identity flag display.
Yeah, except it would clash with the King County flag. We wouldn't want that.
But like I said, the state of Washington's problems are solved. Democrats in the Olympia legislature are moving on to redesigning the flag, which is a problem.
Okay, and again, just to let you know, I've how many times now have you heard me say this? The Democrats in Olympia are as radical as the Seattle City Council was about, you know, 3 or 4 years ago.
Bingo. Yeah.
Okay, they're that far out of touch. They are that ideologically driven, and they are that impervious to what the public wants.
Yeah, the reality.
They don't care what the public wants.
And I'll try and give a little
silver. No wonder they're at war with the initiative process.
Yeah, I'll give a little silver lining. Only two other people have signed up to co-sponsor this, so there are a grand total of three sponsors, which is pretty minuscule for the Washington legislative standards. So I doubt this goes very far, but they're Democrats in the legislature. They're in the majority. You never know.
Yeah. We'll see what they come up with. I'm sure it'll be an improvement.
Like a legislative coloring session?
It's going nowhere. Those people, they'd be finger painting. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570. When we come back, an incident that might change European politics. We'll tell you what happened and why. Coming right up. All right. Local and national and international. We're all about it here on The John Carlson Show. You got 23 minutes to 8 o'clock in the morning. Brilliant sunrise underway. A great day ahead of us. It's Friday Eve. Why wouldn't it be? Okay. A driver, Dateline Berlin, Germany. A driver drove a car into a union march right in the middle of downtown Munich, Germany. Earlier today, at least 28 people have been injured, including children. It, of course, was an attack. I say, of course, because this is actually becoming a trend, and people in Europe have had enough of it, particularly in Germany. The suspect is an Afghan asylum seeker, meaning not a citizen or legal resident of Germany. What happened was there was a union, the service workers union, holding a march, walking along the street with police escort behind them at 10:30 in the morning, when a car suddenly drove ahead of the police vehicle, accelerated, and plowed into the back of the group. Again, there were families marching in this union march, and children have been hurt. Officers arrested the suspect after firing a shot at the car, according to the deputy police chief there. Some of the people in the hospital are seriously injured. A damaged mini vehicle was seen at the scene along with debris. Some people literally knocked out of their shoes by the impact. The 24-year-old suspect has a criminal record. He was, quote, known to authorities, close quote, in connection with theft and drug offenses. No explanation for why someone who is an asylum seeker wouldn't obviously have his asylum canceled or his asylum application canceled and deported after being convicted of theft, after being convicted of drugs. But apparently Germany is as clueless about these things as the United States has been. Well, as we were. That's all changed now with President Trump and border czar Tom Homan. The mayor of Munich said he was deeply shocked by the incident. But I mentioned to you that this incident could change politics throughout Europe. Here is why. It comes 3 weeks after a 2-year-old boy and a man were killed in a knife attack. The suspect there is an Afghan asylum seeker whose application had been rejected. And somehow, I guess he was trusted to simply leave the country. That incident where the 2-year-old and the man, not sure if it was his father or not, made migration into Germany by non-Germans an election issue in the upcoming German election campaign. It also followed knife attacks in the German cities of Mannheim and in Solingen, in which the suspects were immigrants from Afghanistan and Syria. And again, in the case of the Syrian knife suspect, someone who was an asylum seeker whose claim was rejected and was somehow trusted to simply leave the country on his own. You might recall the deadly Christmas market massacre where a suspect, this was in the German city of Magdeburg, where the suspect was a Saudi Arabian doctor who had previously come to authorities, law enforcement attention in various areas around that city. The main opposition conservative bloc in the February, again, the elections are just coming up here in a little over a week. The main opposition bloc has demanded a much tougher approach to what's called irregular migration, calling for many more people to be turned back at the country's borders and for an increase in deportations. This only seems to be getting worse. The governor of Bavaria, Markus Söder, told reporters, "We feel with the victims, we're praying for the victims." But he went on to say, look, quote, "We can't go from attack to attack and show dismay and thank the police for their deployment and then do nothing." He said, "We have to change something." The incumbent chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, said that his government's already done a lot to reduce, quote, irregular migration, and that the opposition's plans are incompatible with German and European law. But he did say the latest incident was, quote, really terrible, close quote. Boy, there's the Joe Biden of Europe. My point here is that this is the same problem we have seen in Scandinavian countries, in Southern European countries, Spain and Italy, in Northern European countries, France, Belgium. These problems all have a common root, and that is a lot of people from countries and cultures that are completely incompatible with European values. I'm talking about people from Afghanistan, people from Syria. They want to escape the misery and the war. Many of these people who come are people who are really just trying to avoid being drafted, avoid having to fight. So they flee to Europe, and the utterly dense former chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, has welcomed them. Talk about ushering in a problem. Talk about someone who has done terrible damage to not just Germany, but all of Europe. A lot of these people had to march through other countries to get to Germany. A lot of them stayed in the country, you know, stopped off in these other countries. And the European Union says that's what you should be doing. You really only, all you need is common sense to know that this doesn't work well. This doesn't end well when people from Syria, from Morocco, from Afghanistan, from other European, or excuse me, from other Middle Eastern countries are going to bring their culture and have no interest whatsoever in assimilating. They want to live according to their code, their values, their country's laws in Europe, where there's more welfare services and a much lighter touch by the law. Again, man-made problems. So I predict you are probably going to see the German people rise up and push back, revolt, and maybe we're going to start seeing the same thing in Great Britain. Boy, do they need it in jolly old England. They have the same problem. And maybe we're going to see this same trend in Scandinavia and in Northern and Central Europe as well. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 48 and a half minutes after 7 o'clock. The Pope is weighing in on the issue of illegal immigration. He doesn't appear to recognize there is such a thing. Details straight ahead. All right. Pope Francis has issued a lengthy statement to United States bishops. He doesn't like the deportation program of Tom Homan and President Trump, and says that he is following, quote, the major crisis that is taking place in the United States with the initiation of mass deportations. No, Your Excellency, Pope Francis, the crisis is in our country caused by open borders. The deportation program is a response to the crisis. So you're missing the crisis. This is the response to the crisis. Anyway, here's what he says. The true common good is promoted when society and government, with creativity and strict respect for the rights of all, as I've affirmed on numerous occasions, welcomes, protects, promotes, and integrates the most fragile, unprotected, and vulnerable. This does not impede the development of a policy that regulates orderly and legal migration. However, this development cannot come about through the privilege of some and the sacrifice of others. What is built on the basis of force and not on the truth about the equal dignity of every human being begins badly and will end badly. What is he saying? That, ladies and gentlemen, is what is commonly called a word salad. It sounds like what he's calling for is open borders with registration. And of course, anyone looking to do bad probably won't be registering, or at least not registering with accurate information. But the bottom line is, again, he appears to be defending open borders. That's the crisis that results in mass deportations, Pope Francis. Anyway, it's all the time we have for Pope Francis, because we've got to get ready for hour number three of the John Carlson Show right around the corner. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson. 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. Hour number three, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, radio program of record for this part of the country, pretty much everywhere else as well. So nice having you with me. Thank you, as always, for letting me be part of your listening day. All right, I want to bring in Senior Chief Executive Producer Philip J. Vandervoort III, because we are in the middle of the Senate roll call vote on whether RFK Jr. will be confirmed as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Now, remember, President Trump has gotten all of his appointees through. All of his appointees, well, there's one who dropped out early, but all of his appointees to every cabinet post have been confirmed. Tulsi Gabbard was confirmed yesterday. She will be the director of all the intelligence services. And now we have Bobby Kennedy Jr. for HHS, and the final would be Kash Patel for the FBI. Where are we, Philip J., with the Bobby Kennedy Jr. roll call? Well, it's not a roll call.
Yeah, exactly. It's, a lot of times they'll call out the lawmaker's name, and then that lawmaker will have to give the vote right there. And this just seems to be open-ended. And right now it's 36 yes, 29 no. You know, you have to get to 50. And then possibly J.D. Vance would, I guess, need to set a tiebreaker. But he's out of the country right now, isn't he?
Yes,
at least
he
was yesterday.
No, he's in Europe.
Okay. So would that maybe give us some reading between the lines insight that they must have 51 votes ready to go today, that they wouldn't need the vice president there to be a tie-breaking vote in the Senate?
Is that one way to read into it? Yeah. My guess is they think they have at least 51 votes.
Yeah, another yes vote has been added, so now it sits at 38 to confirm Robert F. Kennedy Jr. for Health and Human Services Secretary.
Okay.
Fetterman just voted no.
Oh, Fetterman did vote no, huh?
Which is interesting because he voted yes for several of the other Republican choices. It was predicted that there was going to be, in the early going, the speculation was there will be several Democrats who would vote for him, but several Republicans who would vote against him.
Oh, okay.
Because there's concern on the pro-life issue.
Yeah, I knew that there were some Republicans that were kind of undecided or on the fence, but I hadn't heard that there were Democrats that would go for it.
An avowed abortion rights activist. Mm-hmm. And there was also a concern about not the COVID vaccine, but traditional vaccines.
Yeah, seeing that Maria Cantwell Washington is a no vote already.
Yeah, she, she expected, and Patty Murray.
You know, very expected.
Adam Smith just voting no.
Adam Smith's not in the Senate, though.
No, somebody.
Somebody named Smith.
But he feels so strongly that over in the House, he cast a no vote
Lisa Murkowski, who has not always been supportive of Trump, is a yes vote for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So Murkowski's an affirmative.
That is a good
And he's up to 41 yes votes.
Okay. So let us know when he gets to 51. And it's, again, President Trump is just running the table on this. We had another wonderful moment this week when President Trump welcomed the American hostage held for 3.5 years by Russia. The guy's a teacher who was held by the Russians for 3.5 years, finally freed by the Russians after Steve Witkoff, President Trump's chief negotiator, flew to the Kremlin and met with Russian President Vladimir Putin. There's another hostage who is also going to be released from Russia, but this was Donald Trump with Mark Fogel meeting with the press. I believe this was Wednesday or Tuesday evening.
It's a real honor. An honor to have you at the White House.
So you have Trump standing next to Mark Fogel, who has an American flag draped around his shoulders in front of a bank of cameras and reporters in the White House. They're surrounded by the Secretary of State and Witkoff and half a dozen other officials as well.
I feel like the luckiest man on earth right now. And I want you to know that I am not a hero in this at all. And President Trump is a hero. These men that came from the diplomatic service are heroes. The senators and representatives that passed legislation in my honor to get me home are the heroes. I am in awe of what they all did. My family has been a force. I think my 95-year-old mother is probably the most dynamic 95-year-old on earth right now. And I am so indebted to so many people. I think I remember a Churchill quote that he said when the RAF was fighting the Luftwaffe, and he said that never have so many owed so much to so few. And I put myself, fortunately and unfortunately, into that category. And I said, never has one owed so much to so many that this super organism of people that came to my support and the love that I was given sustained me for 3.5 years. in a prison that had me in hospitals for more than 100 days.
100 days in hospitals. Mark Fogel finally free. Here was President Trump in the Oval Office telling reporters a couple weeks ago about Mr. Fogel.
Just like the young gentleman that I brought home yesterday after 2 weeks, we worked on it for 2 weeks. It was a fine man, and he was in there for 3.5, almost 4 years, and they weren't able to do a thing, and I got him out. And as you know, I didn't pay $6 billion. I didn't pay anything. We did a trade, and we did a good job. We got him out in 2 weeks. He should have been out years ago.
You know, he's so right about that. He's right on every score. He was right about that. Biden was basically paying ransom, billions of dollars worth of ransom, and Donald Trump doesn't play that way. He's got now there are a total of 10 people who were either hostages or illegally detained U.S. citizens that he has gotten out of Russia, that he's gotten out of Venezuela and other countries. So again, this is just more good news about we've got a different government. And I think this different government is going to make us a better society and a better country. It's going to change America for the better. Here you have Elon Musk earlier today was asked what he thought we needed to do if we wanted to really get a handle on making government more affordable and more responsive. More money does not make government more affordable, obviously. More money also doesn't make it more responsive. Here's what Musk said. I think we need to delete entire agencies as opposed to leave part of them behind. It's kind of like having a weed. If you don't remove the roots of the weed, then it's easy for the weed to grow back. But if you remove the roots of the weed, well, it doesn't stop weeds from ever going back, but it does make it harder. He said we have to really delete entire agencies, many of them, and that's not to say that there won't be an increase over time of bureaucracy in some new administration, but it will be from a much lower baseline. So it's certainly a step in the right direction. Nothing's forever, but I think we can strengthen the foundations of the United States substantially. Anyone disagree with that? We have needed to do this for a long, long time. And because Elon Musk is not only uncovering waste, but uncovering the corruption, this is the important part now. He's uncovering and spotlighting and exposing the corruption that drives so much waste and inefficiency. So good for him. By the way, again, the call it the Trump effect, latest company to follow Trump's lead on DEI and curtail its diversity, equity, inclusion policies that have created so much division and created so much racial tension and has initiated programs that treat people differently because of what they look like. How about the Disney Corporation? Axios reporting that, quote, Disney is changing its diversity, equity, and inclusion programs to focus more closely on business outcomes, according to a letter sent to Disney employees earlier this week. As part of the shift, sources tell Axios that Disney is moving and changing the content disclaimers it started releasing around certain titles in 2020. Remember, they were putting warnings on traditional Disney hits, sensitivity warnings? Anyway, beginning this fiscal year, Disney will replace the diversity and inclusion performance factor that it had in place to evaluate executive compensation. Instead, they will use a talent strategy factor that is more focused on how values drive business success. They are getting rid Disney is of its controversial Reimagine Tomorrow initiative and the website tied to it, which was used to highlight stories and talent from underrepresented communities. The site, which came under fire for its extremism, was replaced in December by an updated hub on Disney's corporate website. The company has also rebranded its business employee resource groups. This is meant to supposedly strengthen employee community and workplace experience, but often would create less community and more division. So that is being overhauled. And sources now confirming to Axios that Disney is updating the language on the so-called content advisories that run before movies like Dumbo and Peter Pan that warn viewers that the film, quote, includes negative depictions and or mistreatments of peoples or cultures, close quote. Instead, the content advisory will simply say, this program is presented as originally created and may contain stereotypes or negative depictions, period. What is this a sign of? It's a sign that they are hurting economically because people are done with DEI at Disney. They're done with the wokeness. They're done with Disney halfway apologizing for its classic content of the past, which is what they're building their company on. They're taking the company in reverse, or have been. Bob Iger has returned to the company's CEO back in 2022. He said it will now be a priority to lean into Disney's, quote, original values. Our primary mission needs to be to entertain, and then our entertainment will continue to have a positive impact on the world. It should not be agenda-driven. It should be entertainment-driven. Did I tell you that Disney's share price is down almost 40% from where it was a few years ago? So they found that DEI is not good for business, and it's not fair, and it's not appropriate. So this is good news that even Disney is now beginning to pull back on DEI. All right, you got 21 minutes after 8 o'clock, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has just received Senate confirmation he will be the next Health and Human Services Secretary of the United States. 51 votes already there, with a few couple votes still waiting to be cast. He is in. It is Donald Trump continues, as I said earlier, to run the table in Washington, D.C. It is 21 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock. Philip J.'s favorite segment of the day. Social media from socialists right around the corner. All right, 28 minutes now after 8 o'clock in the morning. Philip J. Vandervoort III's social media sweep, which is his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists.
Yeah, this one's going to show us a little bit about how lawmakers in Olympia, Democrats in the majority, don't always seem to have a real good grasp on ordinary, everyday, run-of-the-mill Washingtonians. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. There is a House bill, and this kind of goes to something that I hit on last hour. I was talking about a House bill that would seek to redesign the state of Washington flag. So we've gotten all these other major problems with our ferries, the K-12 schools, the 8th grade test scores, the homeless, drug addiction problems. We've got all these other problems solved. They want to work on the redesign now of the state of Washington flag. And this bill, House Bill 1759, which would designate December 12th on the calendar, 12th month, 12th day of the year, as a tribute to Seahawk fans, Day of the 12s. So the prime sponsor of this is a state representative named Charlotte Mina. But the whole idea of the Seahawks fans and the loyalty the Seahawks fans mm-hmm. have to the team, and you know, in addition to that, the rivalry with the San Francisco 49ers was very confusing for a state representative. I think she's from Olympia, Beth Dolio.
Yes.
So listen to this exchange in the House committee where they're talking about this bill to designate December 12th every year as the Day of the 12s. Here's the exchange between the two state reps, the sponsor, and then the one who doesn't understand the rivalry with the 49ers.
What's the deal with the 49ers? Like, why are we hating them? So you may not identify as a 12.
Perhaps not.
It's an age-old rivalry.
Okay.
Are you a 49ers fan? Tell us now.
I'm a Bears fan.
So the sponsor is a Bears fan, but the whole exchange there, it's just a very revealing that Democrats just cannot relate to ordinary, everyday, run-of-the-mill Washingtonians.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not knowing about the Seahawks to the extent that one of the biggest rivals they have is the 49ers, maybe to a lesser extent the Rams. But these are the people that are in charge of making these massive decisions that are in such a bubble that they don't understand something as
not only that, it's
relatable
also,
as sports fandom.
But it's also just the language. Perhaps you don't identify as a 12.
Oh, yeah, good catch.
Just, you know, can you talk like a normal person, please?
Yeah, that too.
I'm going to stick my neck out and say she's not really a Bears fan.
But that's the battle of reality.
She is very miserable throughout October, November, December of most years.
Right now.
Wow, it's been a long time since Mike Ditka and the Bears.
Right. We talked a little bit about this a couple days ago. Donald Trump now taking over as chair of the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts.
Yeah.
The current chair is out. Donald Trump is in. And thehill.com has a story headlined, "Stars Flee Kennedy Center Groups After Trump Seizes Chair." And one of them is award-winning opera singer and actor Renee Fleming says she's departing from her role as artistic advisor at the Kennedy Center. TV show producer Shonda Rhimes, she's a writer and a producer of some big show. I think she was responsible for the Grey's Anatomy show that's set in Seattle, if my memory is correct. She might be responsible for some other ones, but Shonda Rhimes, the writer-producer, has reportedly resigned from the board after serving the Kennedy Center's treasurer. And a spokesperson for Rhimes said, "Please be advised that as of today, Shonda Rhimes has resigned from the board of the Kennedy Center."
Okay.
So,
all right.
The exodus begins.
Gee, what a shame.
Yeah.
Bye.
That woke Democrats don't feel at home on the Kennedy Center board anymore.
She was a bad egg.
You know, it's not like it's going to be hard to replace you. All right. Anyway, never mind all that. When we come back, I just absolutely love this story about what Doge uncovered and what happened next regarding the Federal Emergency Management Administration. Just a perfect anecdote for how things have changed in this country coming your way.
The Bears.
37 minutes now after 8 o'clock in the morning. By the way, of course, yesterday my big announcement that I will be stepping away from this microphone, retiring from radio, effective Friday, April 4th, here at KVI. I said, you know, understandably, people will say, what are you going to do next, John? What comes after this? You've been behind this microphone for better part of 30 years, more than that, really. You started in July of 1993. What comes next? And I said, I can't tell you until Friday because everything isn't quite official yet. But I will tell you again tomorrow. Tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning, I will announce what my next step will be. What happens after leaving radio? Because while I'm stepping back from radio, I'm not retiring. I'm basically beginning another career. And no, it's not in the news media. I've had a great media career, television, 20 years a newspaper columnist, papers all over the state, 30 years in radio at the same time. Again, it has been great, but starting tomorrow, I'll announce what my new career will be starting this April. All right. I absolutely love this story that explains how things are changing for this country and changing for the better. Elon Musk had his Doge team looking into the Federal Emergency Management Administration. This is FEMA, the increasingly controversial federal agency that is supposed to be responsible for delivering disaster relief. Here is a tweet sent out by Elon Musk. Quote, "The Doge team just discovered that FEMA sent $59 million last week to luxury hotels in New York City to house illegal migrants. Sending this money violated the law and is in gross insubordination to the president's executive order. So in the middle of Donald Trump taking office, Donald Trump making it clear that he did not want money spent on things like this, and making it clear that they were uncovering unnecessary spending. In the face of all that, last week, FEMA just defies Trump and sends $59 million to hotels to house illegal aliens in New York City. Okay, here's what you need to know. First of all, the Department of Homeland Security has fired FEMA's chief financial officer, has fired two program analysts, and fired the grant specialist responsible for the $59 million appropriation. Secondly, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem, who is the under the umbrella authority of Department of Homeland Security that FEMA operates. Secretary Noem has, quote, clawed back the full payment that FEMA deep state activists unilaterally gave to New York City migrant hotels. FEMA was funding the Roosevelt Hotel that has served as a Tren de Aragua base of operations and was used to house the killer of University of Georgia nursing student Lakin Riley. There will not be a single penny spent that goes against the interest and safety of the American people. The Tren de Aragua organization is the violent Venezuelan gang that had built up a visible presence in multiple American cities, took over an apartment complex in, I think it was Aurora, Colorado, if I'm not mistaken. It was a member of that gang who stalked and murdered a young University of Georgia nursing student who was jogging on a trail right next to the campus, Lakin Riley. He has now been convicted and will do life in prison. But I love every aspect of this story. Number one, it shows just how defiant and impervious to the will of the American people that these bureaucracies are, that they would actually try and inject $60 million into luxury hotels accommodating illegal aliens during the Trump administration. Secondly, I love that it was uncovered, because if it hadn't been for DOGE, it probably would have escaped notice for a little while. And by then they could say, oh, that money's already been spent. So I love the fact that the waste was spotlighted. I love the fact that that money was clawed back. And I really, really love the fact that they fired everyone responsible. That's going to be noticed by other federal bureaucracies. FEMA has come under fire. Remember, during the election, after Hurricane Milton just leveled, devastated, ransacked parts of North Carolina, particularly western part of the state, FEMA had one of its officials, her name is Marnie Washington, directing responders on the ground to not offer aid or help to homes that had a Donald Trump for President yard sign in them. The agency fired her and said, oh, that's just a one-off. But the bottom line is Kristi Noem says, you know what? FEMA doesn't need a little work around the edges. It needs to be overhauled. Quote, I would say, yes, get rid of FEMA the way it exists today. So the good news goes on. The good news goes on. This is great. By the way, quick weather report. You thought it was cold yesterday? Boy, were you ever correct. Olympia, 12 degrees yesterday morning. The city's previous low was 16 degrees way back in 1949. That would be 75 years ago, 76 years ago. La Push, 16 degrees just before 6 in the morning when everyone in the town of La Push turns to the John Carlson Show. Their previous low was 23 degrees. SeaTac, 20 degrees yesterday, which set a record. So just to let you know, yeah, it really was a little bit chilly yesterday. All right, it's going to be a little warmer than that today, but they are expecting more snow coming in, primarily the east Puget Sound, Lowlands, think Hood Canal, Chehalis Valley, think southwest Washington. Doesn't look like it's going to be happening in the Puget Sound area, King County area, Pierce, Snohomish. All right. You got 47 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning this Thursday morning. Your comments on the KVI comment line coming right up. All right. 52 and a half minutes after 8 o'clock, 8 minutes to 9 on the John Carlson Show. Since my announcement that I will be stepping away from the KVI microphone in April, we have gotten, well, a ton of response. Hundreds of people have been on the comment line. Just a couple of the comments that have come in, because some of them, boy, they're just so wonderful. Mary from Lake Forest Park said, "I believe with all of my being that no one can replace you. When Rush Limbaugh passed, it left a huge void within the conservative community. Now, you too will leave a void. I never participated in any initiative process in my life. You changed that for me. I never felt the urgency to donate to the political process. You changed that for me, too. I hope wherever you go and whatever you do, please remember the influence you have imparted to us. We love you." That's nice. Thank you very much. Eben, in the town of Bonnie Lake, "John, this is the first time you have made me sad. You will be dearly missed by a lot of people. I wish you and your family well, and good luck on whatever happens next." Another KVI listener says, "John, it's always exciting to begin a new chapter. I know that the signing bonus with the Seattle Police Department is enticing for you, but please be careful." No. I think I can tell you, I can divulge, I'm not going to be joining the Seattle Police Department.
And turn down a free gun?
Got plenty of those already. Okay. And then Mike from Mercer Island. "Congratulations, John. At 6'7", I'm your tallest fan, and I've always looked up to you." That's nice. And so many more comments have come in from listeners. But hey, yesterday I told you what that I'll be leaving media, but I didn't tell you what I'll be doing next because I didn't have clearance yet, because it wasn't official. I wanted to get the word out because I didn't want KBI listeners to hear that I would be leaving from social media, and the word was starting to seep out. So that's why the announcement yesterday. Tomorrow, I'll tell you what I will be doing. And you might be surprised, but in any event, you get to hear it first. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Let's talk again tomorrow.